in a season of parity, a great tournament. A championship of a dominant team and not so great a actual game. It wasn't a season of parity.
Was it a great tournament, or did we get one good weekend? I was thinking about this last night as that game was kind of unfolding, because you're right, it's 21-17, Michigan's up, and Villanova goes on the big run, and Villanova gets up, about 14 there, I guess, and kind of maintained throughout. And you and I kind of had discussed this. My five-year-old kept asking me all day yesterday, in case the answer, I guess, changed. Who are you pulling for? Who are you pulling for? Who are you pulling for? And I kept trying to explain, good game. I would just like to see, I grew up pulling for Michigan, but there's something about Villanova and kind of the way Jay Wright runs his program and Jalen Brunson and that whole thing, and I kind of like Villanova. There's nothing there to dislike, in my opinion, and so I was pulling for a good game, and I started thinking about it. The Duke-Kansas game was really good a week and a half ago, but the Final Four games, Villanova was up on Kansas pretty quickly. Michigan Loyola was good until about the final 5 minutes when Michigan pulled away. What defines a good tournament? We kind of did that a few weeks ago. Maybe what do you like the most? But you had a good first weekend. You had a good Duke-Kansas game. And then after that, I don't know, where do we put this tournament in the pantheon of tournaments you have seen in your lifetime?
It's up there, man. What else do you want from a tournament? You had an 11 seed in the Final Four. You had a 16 seed beat a 1 seed for the first time ever. I didn't think it would ever happen.
You know what? That's the perfect example of this tournament. The 16 seed beats the 1 seed. It never happens, and they do it by 20. It's not even a game coming up. So I think when you say, what do I want? I think this tournament defines it, because you're right. You got the upsets. You got everything that you would typically like. But I like really good close games, and we did get some of those. Tennessee and Loyola, and Loyola was involved in three really good ones. You got the Michigan buzzer beater early on in the tournament, but it makes me wonder, where people will look back on this tournament and how they will view it. If it is of parity, if it's the main thing you remember, is it the 16 beating the 1? Is it Loyola making the, what is the one thing that people will take away from this tournament?
Well, the one thing that goes down in history for sure is the 16 beating the 1. There's no doubt that,
right,
that 2018 will be remembered mainly, I think, for that, because we've seen teams win 2 out of 3 and get largely forgotten. I think it was Kentucky in the late 90s who won 2 out of 3, and I don't feel like they're ever mentioned as a great run necessarily. It was interesting to see the stat last night. Villanova now the fourth team since 1991 and 92, and Duke did it back-to-back, to win at least 2 out of 3 years, joining Florida doing it back-to-back, and then the Kentucky program that did it 2 out of 3 years as well. And the way they do it is kind of under the radar, and it's not a big look at me or any kind of controversy. And Jay Wright, like you mentioned, they're very difficult to find something not to like.
Right.
I guess it was Wagner and Spellman getting after it pretty good. You saw it was the first technical foul in a national championship game in 25 years since Chris Webber tried to call the timeout back in the day, which is an amazing stat. How do you go 25 years in a game without having a single technical foul? And the one we didn't even see what happened last night, because CBS botched that and they were too busy trying to be dramatic going to a commercial, and Jim Nance was like, well, something's happening here.
Yeah, yeah.
What's happening, Jim? What? Show us. They're too busy playing their music. But to me, this tournament had almost everything. Clearly not every game is going to come down to a buzzer beater, and you don't have a single-digit game in the Final Four. That's disappointing. So it did kind of fizzle towards the end. But what are you grinning at over there?
I didn't see everything I missed. I missed the Houston trying to get the World Series thing going.
That was amazing.
And ESPN showing all the yard equipment that was used to get it up.
That was pretty much
my day yesterday when I was built around a lot of basketball and trying to get ready for the championship game last night. And you're right.
Get ready.
Trying to get ready? Are you stretching? You're running a bunch of
prepping the steak,
up and backs,
getting the grill ready.
It was a 9:20 tip, yeah, man. You didn't wait that long to eat.
Actually, 8 o'clock.
Right. It's the worst start time ever. Right. I read something on Twitter, like start times for games. Nothing gets close to 9:20, any kind of championship game. Even the World Series games that are on really late start at like 8:10.
I'm trying to think, what time did the football championship game start? 8?
Yeah.
Was it 8? 8-ish? Okay. Yeah, it shows how much I remember. But I'm with you. 9:08 start time last night.
No, 9:20.
9:20?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So
they went about 12 more minutes than usual.
What'd you think of the introductions, the floor and everything they did? I thought that was pretty typical for what they always do, but I noticed there was a big excitement about the way they were going to do that.
You mean people wrote in all caps on Twitter? Was that the big excitement?
Yeah, pretty much. I guess because of the 3D technology they used on the floor, and they'd never done that. I thought for sure they'd done that before, but
I thought it was really interesting how Michigan came out, and they didn't seem to be extremely excited. Like, they were very businesslike coming out in their intros, which I thought just showed that they could handle the moment. It wasn't that big a deal. And I liked the matchup, man. I thought the first half was pretty good. And the fact – I thought the difference in the game, obviously, what Dante DiVincenzo did was ridiculous, right? 18 points in the first half. He only averaged 13. He comes off the bench. He couldn't miss. And every time Michigan looked like they might cut it to single digits in the second half, he seemed to just hit a three, go to the hoop, whatever he wanted to do. Outside of that, it was that Spellman and Villanova had the answer for Wagner, and Wagner didn't play out of his mind like he had the last couple of games, because he's a really tough matchup, except Villanova has tough matchups all over the floor. Right. And they were just the better team.
Yeah, it's again, I'm with you. I thought that the two teams matched up really well and that it would be an entertaining game, and it was for a little while. But then Villanova, just they got it going early on, and kudos to them, man. It's a good program. And I, for reasons I don't know why I thought, but I didn't realize until yesterday that the majority of those guys are juniors. And I don't know what Jalen Brunson will do, or Mikael Bridges, or – you know, Phil Booth, Spellman's a freshman. It'll be interesting to see, because they're set up to be back in that thing next year and make another run. We talk about parity in basketball. We talk about kind of the youth movement. But it'll be interesting to see what Jay Wright's team ends up doing and where they end up going from there.
79-62, the final score. If you didn't make it up late last night, you didn't miss anything down the stretch. It was never in doubt. It was one of those where it was weird because – I don't know, 4 minutes to go or something, they just started talking about it on the broadcast, how Villanova was the champion and trying to put it in perspective and the whole thing. But DiVincenzo, absolutely ridiculous. 31 points. It's it's a national championship game record for a guy coming off the bench. 31 in the ball game, average just 13 in the regular season. So we'll continue to talk about the national championship in basketball with you. Going to let you hear from Will Muschamp. He was on Inside the Roost last night right here on 107.5 The Game, as Carolina officially wraps up spring practice today. Had two additional practices after spring football game to get to the 15 that the NCAA allows here in the spring period. So we'll let you hear some of Will Muschamp's comments, officially kind of move on or put that thing to bed, even though we're going to talk about it here on the next several months before the season starts as well. We got baseball tonight for the Gamecocks up in Charlotte, neutral site game against North Carolina as well. So we still have a triple threat program, maybe for the last time, I guess, officially, as we recap the college basketball season. We still got the NBA to get to here in the next couple of months of the regular season, or the playoffs will resume here soon. Last couple of games.
Week from tomorrow, man. NHL playoffs. You guys ready?
Okay, there you go. You got Bill's random NHL breakdowns set to start.
Playoff season's upon us.
Is the Lightning going to make it this year?
Oh, they're the top team in the league.
Oh, okay.
Means there'll be a whole lot of hate watching coming up.
Okay, there you go. We're just getting warmed up here. 803-404-6100. Love Chevrolet phone lines. He's at Will Gunter with 1L. I'm at Tim Hill, 107.5. She is at Jen Jensen Morse. We're proudly wearing the Butler shirt and the only person to have Villanova in the national championship game here in the studio, except you had Virginia beating them, right?
That is 50-50. Factually incorrect.
You had Michigan in your championship game? Is that what you're saying?
You said she's the only one that had Villanova in Arizona.
Ah, you had Villanova in there as well, not winning it, too.
Not
right?
Winning it. Arizona. Okay. Taking home the crown somewhere along the line.
So we were correct that Villanova, no. No,
that
I was
Villanova
say,
would get to the championship game.
Yes,
we were
correct about that part.
Only one of us wore the wrong shirt today.
Yeah.
I got my Wildcat shirt on.
Oh, see, there you go. You're repping.
Mm-hmm. Your Lexington Wildcat shirt on.
Wildcat.
Okay. You see what your buddy Barrett Salee had to say about the Gamecocks after their spring game?
Heard what he had to say. Listen to it.
They're loaded, basically, is what he's saying. They are loaded. He says, totally impressed with what South Carolina put forth. The podcast is called Smothered and Covered. Barrett Salee, a longtime college football guy down in the Atlanta area, now employed by CBS Sports. Surprised at all?
No, South Carolina's going to be the trendy dark horse pick, I think, in the entire SEC to go in and maybe upset Georgia and then maybe even upset Alabama or Auburn in the SEC championship game. Now, does that make it right? No, we've seen this before, and every year the narrative is somebody's the dark horse. Let's latch on to somebody. And
who'd you have last year?
Last year, wasn't it Auburn?
That's what I was thinking. Jarrett Stidham coming in as the hot transfer from Baylor, pretty solid defensively coming back, and you saw certainly that end up in an SEC West Division title that nobody saw coming.
Right.
I didn't think you got that narrative with Georgia that they could make the big jump, because there are a lot of questions after year one for Kirby Smart.
Right.
And then their quarterback issues right off the bat with Eason going down, and who's this Jake from State Fromm kid? And then all of a sudden, I mean, we knew the running back duo, but all of a sudden, Georgia takes that next step.
No, I think that a lot of people are going to – and there's two things I noticed in listening to that yesterday, because there's other national analysts that's kind of talking about this. One is that South Carolina does have some players, and that people are kind of – and they've got a quarterback. They've got a face of the program in Jake Bentley. And so national analysts are going to latch onto this. The other one, I think this is kind of interesting. Steve Spurrier, I think, had respect from the media. I don't know if everybody necessarily liked him, because he was not afraid to say what he thought and challenge people and challenge teams and do things in a different manner. Will Muschamp, on the other hand, seems very well liked, kind of almost accepted, again, the way Muschamp handled it. And so I feel like there's a lot of national media fans or folks pulling for him, kind of almost hoping he succeeds because of how things went at Florida. And so there's a lot of people. I think he gets a different view, a different because nobody's saying this is a team that's going to go and beat Georgia and win the East and win the SEC. It's everybody going, well, they're a dark horse contender. And look at what Muschamp's done. He's completely turned that program around. And I just feel like I feel like there's a lot of people who like him and kind of are rooting for him that are maybe in the national media because they kind of like how he interacts with them, whereas Spurrier was always kind of quirky and weird. And if you were ever around him for about 10 minutes, you kind of came away wondering how he would be if he wasn't a football coach.
Spurrier always got the benefit of the doubt on the offensive side of the ball, I feel like. And Will Muschamp, in this particular take, I think really sums up where he is now. His reputation kind of precedes his team. It's Barrett Salee, again, saying that Will Muschamp and Travaris Robinson will figure things out on the defensive side of the ball. He's fully confident in that based on their track record. And I think there is some of that because it's all about media accessibility, right, and how a head coach will interact and what you leave feeling like if you feel like he went out of his way to help you out. And Will Muschamp is that guy, right? We saw that when he just started to be in the conversation as a possibility here at South Carolina. You started hearing a lot of stuff from all different places because he had those relationships prior. It's interesting to me that I think it's because of all the returning guys, because of the way the Outback Bowl ended. And now Brian McClendon, I think, is pretty well-liked in college football circles. And the idea of a new guy taking the helm combined with a guy with Dan Werner's experience there is really easy to add up from a black-and-white perspective on the outside. You say, oh, well, that makes sense. That makes sense. You go to a practice and you hear a guy like Tom Luganbill say they look like Oregon back in the day. And you say, well, they're definitely going to be one of those teams to watch kind of thing. It's a different place for South Carolina football to be here in the last several years. There's no doubt about that. I think we all around here, well, I'm guessing Gamecock fans will probably point to that 2014 season where they're ranked in the preseason. And there are a lot of expectations and Lorenzo Ward's going around saying the Gamecock defense is going to be better without Jadeveon Clowney. And to pump the brakes, there's a lot of, I think, really solid perspective gained from that time, from the outside looking in, and we're starting that time of year where people are just going to take drastically different opinions about particular college football teams. And guess what? You can back up those opinions. I mean, what Barrett Salee is saying, I'm not saying that he's wrong. And
right.
That's a complete logical and rational takeaway, I think, from a spring game. You could also go and say, well, I've seen these guys on offense for a couple of years now, and I know the numbers they put up, and I don't think they're going to take the next step, and they're going to struggle because they have important guys not coming back, like Dante Sawyer and Javaris King and the whole thing. You could go the other way as well.
I think there's two reasons South Carolina fans will be very hesitant to buy into the expectations and maybe buy into what's about to be, in my opinion, the national media hype. And number one is I do think the 2014 season and even the 2015 season is still very fresh in people's minds in how those went down, especially 2014. Mm-hmm. So I think people are going to be very hesitant to emotionally invest in this football team in terms of going. And plus you go back even on a lesser scale, people invested last year after the Missouri game, right? I mean, we saw the atmosphere for the Kentucky game, sure. The blackout and everything, and people invested. They say, all right, we're back. We're in. We're all in. Oh, we lost to Kentucky again for the fourth straight year.
And not just that they lost, but how they lost.
Yeah.
Not being able to move the football and then losing your big playmaker in Debo Samuel to injury.
And so I think, in my opinion, people are going to be very hesitant this offseason here in this market.
So is it cautiously optimistic?
I think there's, yes.
Is it a little bit more than
it'll
that?
It'll be more of a whisper.
Because, and just the way the narrative has changed in the middle, towards the end of the Outback Bowl, I think it would be a completely different type of deal. And what would the offensive situation had been if the game
could
find
out
a way to score some points?
They lose 19-9.
Right.
They score that one touchdown, they end up losing 19-9.
Rico Dowdle won, and that's it.
I think you're right. I think there's a completely different I think there's a lot of people who are still holding on to that. But I think that's number one. I think there's going to be, for multiple reasons, people are going to be very cautious locally, the fan base, in terms of getting fired up. Number two, when two teams on your schedule and really your two main rivals, not only on the field but on the recruiting trail, play in the college football champ and the college football playoff.
Right.
One of them goes on to play in the college football championship game. I think you're looking at it going, we still have a, and plus the way that Clemson has beaten South Carolina the last 2 years, people are going to go, okay, we see that. We see 9 wins. We see a better team, but look how far we have to go, that we're still not close to that team. I mean, 34-10 was at least closer this year, but that game wasn't really a game for the final, 45 minutes, really. Maybe a little less than that. I think it was 7-0, about 10 minutes to go in the second quarter, so maybe the final 40 minutes of it. But I think those are the two reasons you're going to see the South Carolina fan base around here be very, very quiet, very cautious in the offseason in terms of buying into the optimism that I think is going to be presented nationally by, look, Greg McElroy and was it Booger McFarland, whoever, I forget, last year, that picked the Gamecocks and initially did 4-8,
right?
They're gonna have that at least reverse this year with an 8-4. I mean, part of that thing Salee says yesterday is he says, look, this is a team who's, you know, conceivably could win 10 games. And he said the basement, the absolute basement, is 8-4. I mean, think about that right now, where we're back at, where he's going, probably the worst this team does is 8-4.
Mm-hmm.
And South Carolina's history still suggests 8 wins doesn't exactly happen very often.
Mm-hmm. To me, this reminds me of the talk around Tennessee a couple of years ago when everybody's picking them to win the SEC East. You fast forward just a year after that, and they don't win a game in the SEC. It just shows you, to me, how the wildly different ways you can perceive teams and how close you can be, because I think there's still a lot of people who think Jeremy Pruitt can step in there and win some games. They don't know exactly what he is as a head coach, but I think there are those that say, well, Kirby Smart could do it at Georgia, then he can do it, former Nick Saban guy. Just the program seemed to be in completely different places. And then how you view the Florida program with McElwain out and Dan Mullen coming in, and how quickly you think he can put that thing together, it all plays into where South Carolina fits in the SEC East picture. But I think most people are going to pencil them right in and second in the SEC East. And this doesn't even take into account the Kentucky struggles that you mentioned in the last 4 years now, trying to avoid a 5-game losing streak when they go to Lexington, Kentucky this upcoming season. We'll continue to talk football with you this morning. There's a weird thing that happened in Major League Baseball, and I don't know how to even put it into context for you. I will get a hit. And it continues. That was the tweet that Dexter Fowler sent out before yesterday's game. The former world champion Cub had yet to get a hit this year. Started out 0 for 13 with the Cardinals. What did he do in the third inning yesterday?
Got a hit. Oh, man, I feel like that was the easiest question you've asked me in the many months we've done this.
Trying to warm you up, trying to tee it up for you this morning. So that left a couple other guys who had not gotten hits yet this year in the big leagues to do the exact same thing. And it worked out for Josh Reddick. Did not work out for Jose Ramirez. Then it worked. Then the St. Louis Blues copied it. We will score a goal. They scored a goal. They didn't win a game. What do you make of the old self-talk?
Isn't that what we do in soccer?
We don't do anything
America?
In soccer.
Don't, isn't that our chant?
We will score a goal.
No, what is it? We will win.
I believe we will win.
Pearson Fowler's driving in right now, just punching his radio right now. But is it? Yeah, I believe we will. Is that how they do it? And they had, there's a large, have you never heard that, Jen?
No.
I think you can pull it up.
We'll have to get that for you.
Yeah.
In hour number
like
two. Yell, it's a whole thing.
Then I believe. And then, yeah, it's a really, the creative marketing team that came up with that didn't spend much time. Well, I think there was a bar down the road. They were offering happy hour. And basically what happened was, is the creative marketing team wanted to get out of the office as quickly as possible, and so it took about 5 minutes.
Part of the job over at the local TV stations, being a local TV guy, is doing the state championship soccer deal when you take the camera out there. Uh-huh. So I remember, so this is the most eternally slow highlight shoot of all time, right? I mean, you could be out there hours and not get a single goal. But I remember this was the trend here in high school student sections, because there's a lot of quiet in soccer,
yes.
And yet, so it was almost like every 5 minutes they start that chant, I believe, and it goes the whole thing. And so this thing is not just, I think I heard it actually in an Irmo student section way before the U.S. men's national soccer team took it over as their deal.
Is that the most annoying sports fan, is that horn guy at soccer,
the vuvuzela?
There you go.
Yeah. I think it's hard. Maybe we'll do our Frank's Discount Tire poll question about most annoying sports fan out there.
I mean, is that
because,
the guy?
But this guy is part of that, right? I will do this. Like, this reminds me of the I told you so guy. I told you so guy is wrong at least 99% of the time, right? I mean, he's the guy that says, I called it, dude. I called it. Well, you make all kinds of ridiculous calls all the time, typically. And you never point out, you're like, you never say, hey, man, you know that thing I was calling the other day? I was completely wrong about that. Mm-hmm. I told you so guy is always the guy like, yeah, man, I called that. I told you it was going to happen.
Yeah, you get a bunch of people all of a sudden who are like, I told you that 16 was going to be the one.
Called that. Man, Villanova, I knew that. Oh, do you have that in your bracket? No, but
that's
I
most
knew.
That's the annoying guy?
That's in the, it's got to be in the running, doesn't it?
Because that guy is, I believe, your profile picture on Twitter.
Oh, no doubt. Are you kidding me? This guy?
What an exciting time.
He's the best. That's why we all love Lane Kiffin.
He's not afraid to let you know after the fact that he knew it was coming.
Go out.
And we love that about him.
Yeah.
And that's what makes him himself. But this, I just never know about the whole self-belief guy. Because that guy also turns into self-delusional guy pretty quick, right? If this doesn't work for Dexter Fowler, what does he do next? Like, this was just desperation. I will get a hit. I will get a hit.
If it doesn't work for him, he doesn't tell anybody what he was doing, right?
We have no idea. Only the followers of Dexter Fowler know that he put this out last
night. Yeah, nobody else says a word if he doesn't get a hit, basically.
Well, it's his fault for playing for the Cardinals.
So a little bitterness.
Wow.
Hey, a little bitter.
Right.
No love for the one championship since 1908.
Yeah,
I still,
I'm not a Cardinals fan, so that's the one place you couldn't go.
If you were a Cubs
gone.
And a Cardinals fan, we would have big problems
right,
here on the show.
Right,
so I can admire that.
I give him the love, but he shouldn't have put that uniform on. Mm-hmm. That's just, yeah.
So once they turn your back on you just, there's no coming back,
you
right?
Play for anybody else.
Gotcha, except
the
for the Cardinals.
Cardinals,
right.
I will not like you. I will not like you. I will not
exactly.
like you.
Is that and what I you're just listened to the video that I believe
uh-huh.
you will Okay, I have heard that now. Right. So
that's one of those things. Would you like to play it for the people, just in case anybody else was with you on that?
Well, I can.
There might be some people listening. Like, that was rude. You just played it for yourself and
sorry,
not for me.
That was rude.
That's enough. That's plenty. Everyone's like, oh yeah.
I believe that is the theme of American soccer, isn't it? Like, you know, we.
Well, not after not making the World Cup. I don't think there's.
But no,
a
that's
theme.
What you have to do it's, when you go to the game. Like, you're like,
I think now it's we have to do something much different. It's not
quite.
This
doesn't
catchy.
Roll off the tongue quite like I believe we will win.
Well, I mean, you get a drum beat going, and you can make anything
that's
catchy.
Good point.
I think.
That's a good point.
Maybe we'll try to do that in hour number two. Looking forward to hearing from you. Love Chevrolet phone lines 803-404-6100. Will Muschamp on Inside the Roost last night. We'll let you hear some of what he had to say. Again, last official day of spring football for the Gamecocks today.
Oh, did you see Tiger and Augusta yesterday? Oh,
chipped in off the green.
Got the pink shirt going.
How about Wesley Bryan? His first Monday at the Masters. Dutch Fork, high school standout, playing in his first Masters. Practice round. Did you see who he played with yesterday?
No.
Rory.
Oh, okay.
It's a little Rory McIlroy practice round at
you
the
think
Masters.
Rory's going to turn him down?
Another Monday.
Get off my tee box, old man.
Villanova's 17-point national championship will bring this guy out today. As you're headed to work or school, you might already be developing your plan to avoid this guy. Dude, I called it, guy. The person who picked Villanova to win the national championship, who has no leanings, no allegiance to Villanova. They just decided that they're going to pick them. They won the national championship a couple of years ago and looked pretty good in the bracket. Or maybe they didn't even pick them in the bracket. They just picked them maybe last night to say, yeah, I'm gonna say that Villanova's going to win. And all day, you know you're going to hear about it. Did you know that guy? Surely you know that guy. The dude I called it guy.
Well, Yeah, I mean, we all know that guy. But, I mean, look, I don't understand where you're going with this. Like, Villanova was the easy pick here.
Mm-hmm. I'm saying that there are people who this morning will take a personal pride in that Villanova was their call and they got it. And if you thought anything other than that, then clearly you don't know about nearly as much about sports as they do.
Yeah, no. If, let's say, head of Michigan won it and you picked Michigan mm-hmm. and you wanted to be that guy.
It sounds like were you going to be that guy?
With Arizona, yeah, I could have been that guy.
But even if Michigan won last night, you weren't going to be that guy?
No, because I didn't have Michigan in the championship game. I had him in the Final Four. I kind of gloated over that going after last weekend, going into this week. But no, But again, I don't think you can be that guy when Villanova was, I think, the number two overall seed. I mean, it's not like you went out on some drastic limb here and picked Loyola to get to the Final Four. You could be that guy with Loyola, right? If you pick the 11th seed.
Or that nun, whatever.
Or not. Well, yeah. I saw where, thankfully, she's getting a vacation now. Thank goodness for her getting a.
What has been this thing where she travels around with the basketball team? That's the team chaplain.
Look, that's what I'm saying, but that's my point. Like that, now she's taking a break. She's getting a vacation. I saw the article yesterday in one of the. Now that month of March is over for all those media appearances.
We're bitter that we're not Sister Jean, and she is. She's getting all the headlines. You're just bitter.
But I don't think you can be that guy. This morning, I don't think you can be the guy who shows up and says, "Yeah, I had him," and have your bracket in your right hand and your cup of coffee in the left hand. And
there's definitely that guy everywhere.
You got it's. That wasn't. I don't want to say an easy pick, but they were one of the teams. I didn't like Virginia. I would feel very good because I didn't think Virginia could score, and lo and behold, that happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought Villanova was maybe the surest bet to get to the Final Four, also because of the way their bracket set up. So.
Who is the most annoying sports fan? Today's Frank's Discount Tire poll question. Dude, I called it guy. In honor of the Masters teeing off later this week, you got Dilly Dilly guy. Have you been watching the golf? And oh, man, yeah.
You're very familiar with
this guy. And you got two other options as well, Negative Nelly and Poly Positive. So we're trying to hit both sides of the spectrum there. The Poly Positive comes off of the tweets, the multiple, the mantra that Dexter Fowler, the St. Louis Cardinals outfielder, put out yesterday before his game, had been 0-13 to start the season. I will get a hit, I will get a hit, I will get a hit multiple times. That's kind of reminds me of the Poly Positive fan that is always going to believe no matter what. like the Michigan basketball fan with 3 minutes left last night. No, we can do it. We can come back. That guy wears on you after a while, doesn't he? He's right beside you watching a game. But on the opposite end of the spectrum is the guy, the Villanova fan last night. He's like, oh, man, we got to hold on to this thing. They're absolutely dominating. I feel like there's a lot of that around Williams-Brice Stadium, like just waiting for something to go wrong. Sometimes like, oh, no.
Was it Raftery who went into that last night? I think they were up. Whereas right before I cut it off, they were up, I think, 15 or 16. Or rather, I think they were up 19 with about 3 minutes to go. And Michigan hit two shots. And Raftery, who had kind of been, as you mentioned, they'd started to kind of talk about Villanova winning the championship and kind of moving into that conversation. And Michigan hit two shots. And all of a sudden, Raftery's like, well, you got to finish the game.
Well, he's like, I don't put that guy in that seat because he's just selling it. He's just trying to keep people around, and he's good at his job. But... So which one off the cuff there, your first reaction, sir?
Dilly-dilly guy.
Dilly-dilly guy, the most annoying sports fan.
I mean, like, no, to me, there's no more annoying sports fan than guy who yells. You said dilly-dilly, but any guy who yells at the golf tournament.
He's getting the whole guy. Same guy.
Because I feel like that's the person who that morning was in front of the mirror yelling yelling catchphrases and watching, like, his own reaction going, that's the one. I'm going to slay the crowd this afternoon on the seventh tee box with that catchphrase. And then he walks out there and he has a couple beverages and it just gets louder and more. And then he's just randomly yelling it when nobody's hitting. And there is no doubt that is golfing yelling guy at a golf tournament is the most annoying guy. That's actually kind of why I like the Masters. It's the one tournament where I'm pretty sure they take their green cane and smack you over the back of the head and lead you out. Just leave you outside on Washington Street.
What about you, Jen? On the surface, which four of these strikes you as the most annoying? Dude, I called it guy, dilly-dilly guy, negative Nelly, or poly positive? Negative Nelly leading the way in the early vote, by the way, at Tim Hill 107.5 on Twitter.
And honestly, I kind of want to slap the dude I called it guy, smack them upside the head. That just drives me nuts. Like, no, you didn't. You
know? Or even if you did.
Yeah.
Especially now, the Villanova one.
Now I know why she looks at me so angry on Monday morning after the NASCAR races.
Brandon just says, I voted dude, I called it, but my vote goes for the casual fan that says, it's just a game. That's actually the worst. That is a pretty good one, Brandon. Well done. I don't know which one I would go with here off the top because I think in their own situations, they're all equally annoying, right?
Agreed.
It just depends on, like, if you're Michigan last night and you're poly positive and you're not going to accept anything other than, oh, come on, we can still do it, guys, come on. If you're the other side of that thing, and I guess I would probably vote negative Nelly because it seems like they go to games never having fun, ever. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's really annoying, but also the self-delusional poly positive all the time, going to win, never being able to accept anything else, they're almost equally delusional.
That guy doesn't bother me. The negative guys, and you see those because you go to the football or the basketball game and they're in front of you or they're behind you.
Anytime the ball goes up in the air, it's going to be an interception, that guy?
Well,
you know,
it's just the guy who apparently gets confused and think the team and the coaches take the field with the intention of losing.
Right.
You know, like that. Oh, I don't understand why they called that. The person who goes out there and they're just completely confused. They think that the team has decided today. We just don't feel like being here. We're
just to make your life worse.
Yeah. And my only thought on that is like, man, you paid or you got a free. Somebody gave you a free ticket, or you got a free ticket, or you paid for your ticket. I'm not saying anybody's above criticism, especially having gone to college games. I'm not a big fan if people are around me of criticizing players. I'm not a big fan of the criticizing of players. I don't mind at a college game the criticizing of the coaches. You want to criticize the coaches, that's fine. Now, at the professional level, criticize whoever you feel, mm-hmm. Feel free to knock out go for the cheerleaders, go for the mascot, whoever you want to criticize, just blame it all on whomever you find, the beer vendor, whoever you want to criticize, that's fine. But at the college game, I don't know, there's always something that I feel bad or kind of get a little upset with the guy who's very, very angry with the kid, whereas, like, the coaches make money. If you want to criticize Kurt Roper for bad play calls, you want to criticize Lorenzo Ward for bad, they get paid a good bit of money, and I understand
that. Criticism.
Yep, I totally get that.
Howie hits us up this morning. Says, what about having Villanova beating Michigan in my bracket? Got to be worth some gloating. That's true. But didn't he just become dude I called it guy without saying it? That's what I just heard. It depends how you do it, Howie. If you say, like, actually, yeah, that's what I had there. But it wasn't going out on a limb. It was a one versus a three. I get that, but I'm proud. You can be proud without mm-hmm. being that guy.
Yeah. Don't have to put it up on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram.
Like,
or
Howie, you didn't start your morning by sending us a tweet that said, dude, I called it. Villanova, Michigan. Had it, and then send us a picture of your bracket. And like, right here. Told you guys the whole time. So he didn't quite become that guy. Craig hits us up in the Shepherd's Glass inbox this morning. Says, Baba Booey guy. And maybe you guys can help me with this one. And mashed potato guy?
I believe that's another golf thing there. What,
can we talk about that on the radio? Is
when
that a
you,
thing?
When
what's
you
the
hit, I guess, a good drive, you yell mashed potatoes or whatever.
Any particular reason?
Don't know. I just picked this up from watching golf on a Sunday afternoon. And people are, I'm telling you, man, that bar none most annoyed. That's an easy one for me. That guy, and I don't know how many people you will run into like that around at the Masters. It's kind of like guy who, when you're teeing off on a par five, and it's a 600-yard par five, and it's a dog leg
getting
left, and yeah.
Getting the whole guy.
You just want to turn around and... I'm not a violent sports fan by any... Not only that, I'm not a tall person, so violence is not in my nature. But yeah, that guy is the one you just want to be like, please get him out of here. Or after every time somebody hits a putt and they're just randomly yelling.
Well, at least the putt, you get in the hole, makes a lot more sense than
it's got
the
a chance. I do totally agree. I'm just.
Travis hits us up this morning. Shepherd's Glass inbox says, I vote for the always positive sunshine pumper. We're putting that as poly positive in our Frank's Discount Tire poll question today. But Travis would also like to throw in the guy sitting two rows from the top in the upper deck, consistently yelling down at Muschamp to run the ball because, of course, Muschamp can hear him.
That's actually the other guy that you should have put in there is the coach.
It's a good point.
In the stands.
It appears the mashed potato thing is some kid wanted mom to know he was at the tournament.
Ah, that's the genesis. That
yeah,
makes sense.
Yeah,
that's how so, that started.
See, I got no problem with
something
that.
About during a Tiger Woods swing or something, he yells that so that if a mom knew he was at the tournament.
Okay, but, I mean, don't we have cell phones now?
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, can't you just tell your mom you're going to the tournament?
She wanted, I guess, to be able to...
That was yeah.
He
because somebody
GPS.
Like 2011.
So see, I like this. This kid was this mom was thinking ahead. She apparently this is a bad kid, and she was already thinking that maybe he would, what is it, superimpose himself into a picture at the golf course and send it to. He's actually on spring break, like right. down in Key West.
Nefarious activities. This
here's,
was his alibi.
Look, Mom, here's a picture of me out on the seventh tee at Augusta.
It's an interesting system they got going there. Wesley weighing in via the Shepherd's Glass inbox this morning about Gamecock football. Our discussion, we just heard from Will Muschamp about developing some more depth on the offensive line and how that affects tempo and what they want to do with that this year for Gamecock football. Wesley says it doesn't matter who's taking snaps or who's running the ball or what scheme you're running. Need a good offensive line to be successful. Hopefully, Eric Wolford has the guys ready next year. You got to think the frontline guys will be because we've seen their work. They've been solid. The improvement was significant, I think, from Will Muschamp's first year with Sean Elliott to Eric Wolford's first year in year number two under Muschamp last year. Especially pass protection is where they improved the most. It's running the football moving forward, especially in those short yardage situations where I think there's the most possibility for this version of the offensive line, the 2018 version, to become kind of that next level offensive line that Gamecock fans saw a little bit of, I think, during the 11-2 seasons for Carolina football.
They've got to line up and run the ball effectively. There are going to be games this year where South Carolina has to win with the run game. You know, you look at the schedule, and the schedule sets up for South Carolina to be successful throughout the year. You've got the big game against Georgia early on. You've got the October games against A&M and Tennessee, the Florida game in November, obviously the Clemson game. South Carolina has got to run the football, and it's going to come down to the offensive line. Now, they're saying this is one of, if not the most athletic offensive lines they've had in quite some time. You've got a projected top three-round draft pick in Zach Bailey there. Donnell Stanley's a guy that's got some pro potential. Can they kind of get together and run the ball effectively? And I think Bobby Bentley sums it up. There are times you have to run the football, and everybody knows you're going to run the football, and it doesn't matter. You don't have to break it off for a 60- or 70-yard run, but you got to get 4 or 5 yards. And that's going to be the question mark for South Carolina going into the season. You have the running backs, Rico Dowdle, A.J. Turner, Tyson Williams, even Mon Denson has showed it, Deshaun Fenway. I mean, they've got guys. They're not lacking for guys. So it's going to be fascinating when we get into the season and we really get to see what this offense is all about. When wins and losses or when the scoreboard really matters, not on the spring game where ESPN, the SEC network, showing one score and the scoreboard showing another score. Nobody knows who's on what team.
And the Garnet and Black game is kept score on the one scoreboard with the Garnet and White team, and there's no black jerseys anywhere.
Did you catch? I didn't know this either yesterday. I missed this when I rewatched the show, the game on the first time. Apparently, one team was going to wear black on Saturday, but it was too hot, so they switched to the white jerseys,
okay.
White uniforms. So it was going to be Garnet and Black, and then apparently in the locker, they're like, oh, it's a little bit too hot. Let's go.
Discussion even go? Because I can never imagine a football player saying, "Oh, it's too hot to wear this black jersey today."
Yeah, that's at least
especially the spring game when it was mid 60s.
Well, they were talking about that. How last year's spring game, the 2017 spring game, was in the 90s, and Saturday wasn't too bad. I think it was high 60s, but they do have to look. It's going to come down because I think all of us like we all get together after the show and have a big lunch, you know, all the listeners
rally at the state house.
All of us are in agreement. I think a lot of people are in agreement. The defense will be fine. They will figure. They have good players. Maybe you need some experience. Maybe J.C. Horn's got to come in and be experienced. Maybe Keyshawn Nixon, who played more down the stretch last year, has got to gain experience. Yeah, you got to figure some things out at the safety position. But the defense will work out. The offense has everything there to be successful. Conceivably, in terms of playmakers, this is as good an offense as Steve Spurrier had during the 7-6 year when you had Dylan Thompson, when you had Demir Byrd, and you had Nick Jones, and you had Mike Davis at running back. You had
Farrell Cooper.
I mean, you had so many weapons on that team. And this offense, you look at it with Brian Edwards and Shai Smith, who's proven himself a little bit, I think, and then obviously Debo Samuel with Rico Dowdle and the running backs with a quarterback in Jake Bentley who can throw it. It should be as an explosive. I think if Steve Spurrier has this team, if it's Steve Spurrier's offensive mind, if Steve Spurrier's the head coach here, they're picked to what you think they're picked to win the East with that schedule?
No.
Oh, I think they would be.
Come on. With I Georgia coming be. Off a national championship
I think they'd
game.
Be picked to win the I think that Georgia losing everybody if you put Steve Spurrier's offensive mind on this, cuz I think that's the question. Barrett Slee can say whatever he wants and say, "Well, this team, you know, has got all the playmakers." It's year six of the Will Muschamp coaching era, four at Florida, two at South Carolina.
So it'll be year number seven.
Yeah, excuse me, year seven. But in 6 years, nobody's ever seen Muschamp have an offense that if this was Steve Spurrier and you put all those weapons coming off 9-4 and you look at that schedule and Georgia coming to Columbia,
mm-hmm.
I think that South Carolina would be the pick to win the Eastern Division. I think because of the credit that Spurrier gets in the offensive mind, people would say he's got all the weapons there. This is the year that it – because that's exactly what was – think about this. That's what was happening the 7-6 year. Everybody said, well, Dylan Thompson and Cooper and Byrd and Mike Davis. And so I think it was McElroy who goes on there and picks them to go 11-1 and win the SEC, and they're a top-10 team because of Steve Spurrier's offensive mind. If Spurrier – I don't want to say was the offensive coordinator, but if Steve Spurrier was the head coach, I think everybody would look at his offense, these players – and say, yeah, they're the pick to win the SEC East and maybe even win the SEC outright.
Well, if they're coming off an 11-2 season, I agree with you to some degree. And if Georgia was just coming off an East Division championship, I agree with you. If Auburn had beaten them in the SEC championship game and had not taken that next step, and then they win the college football playoff game and beat Oklahoma and go to the national championship game, then I would agree with you. I just think Georgia got so far. And, you know, a lot of those guys will not be a part of this team. I'm with you on that. Will not be a part of this year's team, but I think their recruiting rankings factored into that as well. The depth that they've developed there for Kirby Smart, I think that's the difference this year for expectations. Fortunately, we got more months to discuss that. Wanted to give you final poll results. One last entry via the Shepherd's Glass inbox today. One last contribution from Gareth asking you the most annoying fans was today's Frank's Discount Tire poll question. He goes with the fan of different schools depending on the sport guy. Had a buddy that was a Gamecock football fan and a Duke basketball fan. And then it says mind bottling. I'm guessing that might have been an autocorrect from his phone. But feel free to use mind bottling at work or school today. if you're confused. That's just mind-boggling.
Add that into the list of things that get said on the show. Sure.
Well done, Gareth. Thanks for hitting us up. He hit me up on the email, tim.hill@cumulus.com. Final Frank's Discount Tire poll results this morning. Who's the most annoying sports fan? 46% of 234 votes going with Negative Nelly. That beats out Dude I Called It Guy finishes in second place today. Dilly Dilly Guy in third. Polly Positive in fourth. What'd you think today?
I think it was a nice post-national championship episode.
Hey, Dilly Dilly. Thanks for listening.
Come on.
The Early Game, 107.5 The Game.